Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Edward Emmanuel to our party.
I'm incredibly grateful to the Jane Austen Center for their invitation. Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with novelist and short story writer Jeffrey Conrad about his short story, In Costume.
Identity for me is so much about the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Who am I? These things that I choose to do, what story am I telling myself about, you know, about who I am as a person?
Writer Jeffrey Condren. And let us be reminded, there is no charm equal to tenderness of heart on Arts and Letters.
In Costume. A woman wearing a pale yellow Regency dress, not an original, but a lovely imitation, sat smoking a cigarette among the wreckage of the tables and chairs, her careful hair beginning to fall apart. Ava was not unaware of the way she looked. Her self-consciousness and ability to see herself with a cinematographer's eye were legendary among her friends. It was a point of affection, a reason to say, "Oh, Ava," with a smile on your voice.
From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, let's take up the world of Jane Austen reenactors. And one story in particular, In Costume, from writer Jeffrey Condren's collection, Claire Wading into the Danube by Night. We open with the celebratory fundraiser. Enter Vivian, Roger, Ava, and an aging American actor who is surprisingly stopped by the event, Edward Emmanuel.
All around her were its signs. The empty champagne bottles, dessert plates stained with chocolate and strawberry, cloth napkins twisted like found origami. And of course, there had been the surprise appearance of Edward Emmanuel.
You know how many times I've said that line? My God, don't ever become an actor.
The center had kept its doors open after hours for the event. The upstairs reception room, where lectures about Austen's life were sometimes given, had been cleared for the round tables and place settings. There had been white cloths, candles. A trio had been hired to play music. Vivian was known to be a wonderful fundraiser for the museum.
I called his agent. I thought, one can but ask.
She and her husband, Roger.
You were brilliant.
Though he seemed to spend most of his time shaking the occasional hand and smiling absently. No, these events belonged to Vivian. She had a way of moving around the room and creating an immediate intimacy, grazing an elbow or a shoulder with her fingertips, modulating her voice for each guest's imagined needs, almost but not quite touching them for a check right there in the middle of things.
It's why they've been invited,
Vivian reminded her, murmuring through clenched teeth, an ever-smiling mouth.
Subtlety is lost on most people.
Ava loved her complex snobbery, loved most days being the woman's protege.
Jeffrey Condren, Claire Wading, Into the Danube by Night. Welcome.
Great to be here.
So in this collection, there are 10 stories, and you're really a ventriloquist, and you like to move in and out of different people. How do you do that? And particularly in this one, In Costume, we're from a female perspective. Often it's kind of omniscient, but it's female perspective for sure.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, certainly most of my stories are written from the point of view of men, but You know, this is one where I decided to take a chance and write it from the point of view of a woman. I don't know. I'm an only child raised by a single mom, surrounded by women all of my life. And so it doesn't seem that foreign to try to slip into that voice, you know, that that world that women inhabit on a daily basis. It's not my experience, but I've been standing right there watching both the joys and the difficulties that come with being a woman, especially in an industry like the movie industry.
She was taking in everything, all the little touches that had transformed this dusty meeting room into an occasion. Most notable were the items that Vivian had brought in from other rooms in the center. There was the mannequin dressed in a blue gown and bonnet, the porcelain tea service, a framed drawing of the famous crescent. Of course, the real attraction was the reenactors like Ava herself, dressed like a page out of Northanger Abbey, out of Persuasion.
It's a bit of a takeoff on Jane Austen, but at the same time, mm-hmm. it's a takeoff on film. So were you imagining this as a kind of film? Because one of the main characters is in a film. The other is an aspiring actress, although it hasn't really happened for her. Were you dealing with film in a way through words?
Yeah, you know, I was interested in not only what's going on with the film industry now with the Me Too movement and, you know, all of those considerations, but also when you pair that up with talking about Jane Austen, you know, immediately Jane Austen invokes ideas of femininity and social class. There's no way to not be involved in that somehow. And to pair it then with Hollywood film magnifies those things.
One of the reenactors hadn't shown, Jeremy, who carried off mutton chop sideburns in a way that was oddly sexy. Vivian had been beside herself for a little while because of this defection. That was her word. She took these things very personally. But only the staff would know they were a boy short. By the time the sun was beginning to set and the candles were lit, the wall sconces turned on to create a warm, low light, all had been forgotten. Roger and a friend were discussing the demise of Manchester United and the impact of the Brussels bombings on the stock market. Vivian was heard to be rationalizing Jeremy's absence.
The reenactors are really for the women,
she was saying.
It's their nostalgia that's at stake for that. The dresses are what's important.
Nostalgia? Ava wasn't sure how she felt about the word.
You're really taking on a big fan base here. You know, at one point you use the word fangirl. I mean, you're taking on a big fan base. Did that scare you a little bit? Because it's not pure Jane Austen, but you have to have your facts right here. And there are a lot of allusions.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think I had realized what I was stumbling into until I read a section of the story once and got all of this reaction to the story, people coming up after the reading and wanting to ask me questions about the story and about Jane Austen. And I thought, oh, wow, I didn't realize I was sort of putting myself up here as a Jane Austen expert, which of course I'm not. But I certainly have read a lot of Jane Austen and seen a lot of the film adaptations. And, you know, this is how my wife and I entertain ourselves half the time, right, watching these adaptations.
Vivian rolled her eyes, but then smiled. She failed, however, to clarify why she'd said nostalgia like an obscenity. The tone of voice was in Ava's mind now, and she couldn't let it go, that the food was a nice distraction. Roast beef au jus, new potatoes, asparagus and butter. Soon, the musicians had hit their stride and everyone was seated. A waiter was pouring Ava her second glass of champagne when something in the room shifted.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Edward Emmanuel to our party.
The musician stopped mid-note. The actor was a tall man in corduroy trousers, a black shirt with a black tie, and a jacket of an almost indescribable color, perhaps platinum. His once blonde hair was artfully tousled, and on his face he wore a pair of tortoiseshell eyeglasses. There was exhaustion there, like gravity.
I'm incredibly grateful to the Jane Austen Center for their invitation.
There is a real Jane Austen Center in Bath, in England. And of course, that's where Jane Austen and her family went to live after her father died. And, you know, it's also where she died. And, you know, for her, Bath is not a place that has a lot of really positive connotations, but it's turned into a kind of locus of interest for Jane Austen fans. And so they have this kind of little museum there.
I'm incredibly grateful to the Jane Austen Center for their invitation.
He turned to look at Vivian, whose hand, both hands actually, were resting on his arm. He paused, smiling. One beat. Two.
What's a guy have to do to get a drink around here?
The crowd laughed appreciatively at this commonplace, and soon a champagne flute appeared.
May we bring you something to eat?
Vivian said. She smiled at him, but flickered a quick look at Ava.
That dessert looks awfully good. Something happens when you turn 60. Dessert becomes irresistible.
When Ava set the dessert plate in front of him, she brought over two slices, the berries slick with a sugary glaze. He smiled gratefully. The smile revealed deeply scored wrinkles. It was a face that had spent much time in the sun. Yet there was still some of the virility that in his youth on the screen had poured off him in waves, like a heat.
My wife and I were on our honeymoon in England and went to Bath and went to the museum and we loved it and had a good time. And I really thought, hey, you know, there's something going on here that I want to capture. So I made this museum the sort of center point of the story. The main character, Ava, she works there both as a kind of Jane Austen reenactor and somebody who's also involved in the running of the museum to some level. And on the day that the story begins, they're doing a fundraiser and they have invited an American movie star named Edward Emmanuel to come and be...
an aging American.
That's right, right, you know, and...
kind of over the hill.
Yeah, you know, he's somebody who's at least in his 60s at the time of the story. He's definitely, I think, a kind of Robert Redford-like character, right? And perfect, I thought, for playing the role of Admiral Croft.
You're listening to Arts and Ladders. We're talking with writer Jeffrey Condren about his short story, In Costume. We'll be back in a moment. I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Ladders. Let's return to our conversation with writer Jeffrey Condren about his short story, In Costume.
I was sorry to hear about your friend.
Thank you.
Who do you mean, Roger? What friend?
Robert March. He wrote Love 40. It was a tennis movie. We met on the set and have been friends for more than 40 years. Had been friends, I should say.
I'm so sorry.
He was a remarkable man. He knew books, of course, but food, too, and drink. He had one dry martini every day.
That's a lot of gin.
Well, he lived to be 90.
One of the guests approached Vivian and Roger, wanting to say hello, feeling the need for a bit of the personal touch before handing over their money, and quite probably drawn by the pool of the actor sitting so close by. While they were distracted, Emmanuel leaned close to Ava.
How am I doing?
His voice was now quite different, sober, all the joshing animation of the last few moments completely gone. It was a low voice, deep, and displaying a touch of anxiety. The real voice, perhaps, of Edward Emmanuel. You've been wonderful, Mr. Emmanuel. And I'm sorry about your friend. You clearly loved him.
Yes. Bob taught me about the role of storyteller, to engage and provoke, to inspire, and ultimately to connect us.
And so he shows up at this fundraiser, and something kind of happens between Ava and he. You know, not something immediately romantic, but for her, she realizes that it's something that's there if she wants to pursue it.
Have I missed something funny?
Oh, I caught myself delivering one of my own quotes.
Then to Ava.
You know how many times I've said that line? My God, don't ever become an actor.
The table broke into laughter, but there must have been an expression on Ava's face.
Of course, you are an actor, aren't you? Right, just look how lovely you are in your dress. Clearly, one of the Bennett sisters. The important question is which one?
Well, he's flirting with her a little
absolutely.
Bit, but he's an actor, and he knows how to make people comfortable,
that's
too.
Right.
So she's not sure if he's actually flirting or if he's just being nice, right?
In fact, her initial thought was, yeah, that's what he's up to. He's just being a star. But then, you know, she realizes, well, maybe there is something there. And what would that mean for me if that were the case? Mm-hmm. Yeah, would it mean anything? And she's not someone who, when I first conceived of her as a character, I thought, oh, here is somebody who is incredibly ambitious and grasping and is going to do anything that she can possibly do to get to the top of her profession. You know, that's not Ava, but, you know, she wouldn't have gone and sought it out. But suddenly, here's this scenario where an inside track to a Hollywood star and all of the doors that that might open. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, a certain kind of decision is before her. Do I pursue him? This guy who, if I go and watch his old movies, you know, he was a handsome, charismatic guy, and he still kind of is. I'm not really interested in him, but I can't dodge this feeling that maybe if I get to know him better, something will happen for me.
So it's a kind of an old-fashioned romance of longing. At first.
Yeah.
Imagining possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, who is this guy and what can he represent in my life?
Later, Ava was helping Vivian bring a round of coffees to the table, her mind still listening for Emmanuel's voice. How did you get him here tonight?
I called his agent. I thought one can but ask.
A version of the Regency dancing, made famous in the Austin films, had always been part of the plan for the evening. With Jeremy missing, one of the female reenactors had to sit out, but Ava took her place across from her partner and soon lost herself in the complicated steps and gestures that passed couples down the line in a whirl of skirts and wide smiles. Occasionally, however, Ava glanced back to the table to find Edward Emmanuel.
A woman wearing a pale yellow Regency dress, not an original, but a lovely imitation. How much of this story is about imitation?
Yeah, quite a bit. You know, ultimately, I think all stories are about identity and making identity and asking ourselves, who am I as a person? If I, you know, make a certain decision, what does that mean about me? And we don't always know who we are, even if we think we do. You know, we've had a certain set of experiences. This young woman is, you know, she's like 28 years old. She's not, she's not 18 or 21. She's almost 30 years old. Somebody who's made a few decisions and has the ability to look back and think in kind of long-term consequences about what will happen if I do the following things. What will that mean about me?
At this distance, he was perhaps only a jet-lagged traveler in need of an omelet and a Bloody Mary to lift the sag of the shoulders and the spirit. One noticed the constant self-possession, the control exerted over every gesture, the raising of a glass, a smile, the dubious arch of an eyebrow, which might have been acting, but might also be the genuine expression of long habit, grace. Ava realized that she wouldn't at all mind if he looked up just now to watch her dancing, and then berated herself for always needing to have someone looking, admiring, and approving. Wasn't nearly the entire room already watching?
You know, we often think of actors, they look at themselves being looked at. Mm-hmm. And I see this in this story so much, how she's being looked at, and he's always worried about how he's being looked at. And, you know, the camera doesn't lie. How much of this is about being looked at? Because it's almost a lens looking at these characters in microscopic ways, and we're picking up a lot of details too. And certainly literary authors write with details, but in this case, it's ultra detailed.
Yeah. For sure. You know, the theme allows for so many ideas to shake out of it. What it means, of course, is that we, in our culture at the moment, have this kind of idea of ourselves visually, constantly in our minds. And, you know, part of that is that we're inviting, again, through social media, people to examine our lives. They are made public in a certain way. And, of course, for actors, it's maybe always been like that. You're paying to look at me as I inhabit another character. And, of course, that's what Ava is doing. She's trying on a role to see if it fits.
Trying on a costume.
Yeah, trying on a costume. You know, am I that woman or am I a different woman?
By the time she returned to the table, her upper lip was beaded with perspiration that she had to wipe away with the back of her hand and cover with a smile. Ah, my God, it's so hot up there.
You were perfect. They've been giving me lessons on set. I find the dances unbelievably difficult. Apparently, there's a scene where they want Admiral Croft to trot out his wife with all the other ladies.
He was talking again in his actor's voice. No, as stars. An insider buying an expensive lunch at the old Polo Lounge, pitching his project. As if the buoyancy of his personality alone could win over the pretty young woman in her yellow dress, the snobbish crone and her self-important husband, the whole party. He reached out and covered Ava's hand on the table.
I didn't mean to offend you earlier.
He gave a little squeeze, his skin pleasantly warm.
I do hope you'll forgive me.
There's nothing to forgive. Emmanuel smiled too, and then turned her hand over to examine the palm. The entire table was watching them.
Mm-hmm.
In the center, do they have reenactments like this? Were you there?
We were there, and not to this level. You know, certainly all the people, if I am remembering correctly, many of them wore costumes. I think there's regularly someone who stands outside the front door dressed in Regency costume. But this is meant to be a special occasion. The center has, they have at least some reenactors, and of course, you can't go very far in the city of Bath without running into some kind of Jane Austen reenactors. And so imagine them as a troupe, right? That these were people that someone had organized. And, you know, that was my little fictional license there to imagine them as a group of actors. They knew how to do the Regency dances and to wear the clothes right and speak with a certain sort of diction, you know, that kind of thing.
Your future is all here, you know? At least that's what my old grandmother believed. She also believed that it's best not to look. Don't tell them. They still believe they control your fates.
Now Ava will remember this forever. The day that Edward Emmanuel didn't read her palm.
Well then, my work here is done.
He stood and buttoned his jacket, laughing away their pleas for him to stay. When it was clear that he was determined to go, it seemed half the party was prepared to see him to the door. Vivian's voice rose shrill and triumphant above the crowds. At last he was released. He started to the right and then remembered he wanted left. Down the hill and generally in the direction of the Roman baths. To begin with, his walk was stiff, but soon he strode along confidently, disappearing into the English night.
He's headed back to his hotel, I'd imagine.
Someone should drive him.
He doesn't need to be driven if he doesn't want to be. Ava, what do you think?
I don't think he needs anybody's help.
Possibly you're right. You know, Edward Emmanuel really took a liking to you.
Is Vivian what Ava will become?
Vivian is what Ava is afraid she will become. And she doesn't not like Vivian. She can tell that Vivian is a person who has a big personality, but who finds herself in a role that at least Ava sees as limited. And again, because Ava is approaching 30, you know, she's starting.
And Vivian's about 60, right?
Yeah, you know, she's beginning to think, you know, what will these life choices, where will they take me? You know, I'm almost 30 years old and I'm a Jane Austen reenactor. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to go to Hollywood and be famous or, you know, be on Broadway or something like that. And here I am at a little acting troupe in Bath, you know, pretending to be a minor Jane Austen character. It feels like it's meant to be an important moment of decision for her. And certainly one of the main reasons that Vivian's in the story is to act as a counterpoint, something for her to see and to begin to push against in her own mind.
The center cleaned, the costumes put away. It was time to say their goodnights. The air outside was beautiful. Ava took a deep breath and walked up the hill to the crescent. There was one garden apartment that could always be counted on to have the curtains open and every light burning. Ava paused to look inside. She simply couldn't help herself tonight. The living room seemed to her a stage set, hardwood floors, a white mantle, and three girls, sisters clearly, lying on the floor watching television. They all had high ponytails that bobbed and fluttered with constant movement. 6 feet waving in the air behind them like the rudder of a ship. She had thought they were darling. 8, 9, 10 years old, gazing into the screen and dreaming.
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's return to our conversation with writer Jeffrey Condren about his short story, In Costume.
The movie wasn't to be found at the library, but Ava was told it might be available online, and so it was. She chose the comfy chair by the apartment's best window and hit play, the sun pouring warm on her hair and shoulders. At first, the faded colors and dated soundtrack disoriented her, so heavy on the brass. Eventually, though, she settled into the story. An American tennis player, undisciplined in his play, but rising through the ranks.
David Church has one of the best returns of service in the game. The question on everybody's mind now is whether or not that counterpunch is a big enough weapon to win a major tournament. It was reported Mr. Church was seen last night in Montmartre in the company of a French fashion model.
And there was Edward Emmanuel, not yet 30, wearing white. He was at the sideline of the grass court, toweling away a skein of sweat from his forearms. He squinted with great intensity into the sunlight, and a breeze blew his blonde hair like a young lion's.
Church is excellent from the baseline, but his shots are not overwhelming. For him to win, he has to manipulate his opponent out of position. It requires great patience, and then he goes for the winner. That's just it, isn't it? Does David Church have the discipline to play his game?
In the final frame, David Church held aloft the Golden Cup.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with writer Jeffrey Condren about his short story, In Costume. We'll be back in a moment. This is Arts and Letters. Let's return to our conversation with writer Jeffrey Condren, where we discuss his short story, In Costume. All right, let's talk about the moment where they're doing the film Persuasion and Ava shows up at the film set.
She recognized him immediately and found that she had stood up straighter, pushing with the rest of the small crowd of observers against the wooden barrier. He wore the dark blue jacket of his naval uniform and the long, ornate hat. Jane Austen's heroines had loved men in uniforms. Almost casually, Ava tested the weight and heft of the barrier. It was lighter than she expected, almost flimsy, hardly anything to keep her from the cameras and mics, the horse and carriage, the ladies in their lovely dresses, and Edward Emmanuel.
She lifts the rope, and she kind of crosses, like maybe Dorothy, into the other world.
Yeah.
Why does she do that?
You know, I've been talking about her in terms of a moment of decision. To know him at all, or try to know him at all, is a big decision. But then, you know, how do you squeeze yourself into a celebrity's life?
Going for nonchalance, a little disbelieving in how brazen this was, she moved the barrier aside and slipped through. She didn't look at any of the observers, but turned and began to walk forward with long, easy strides. She reminded herself how cute she looked in her white driving cap, how nice her legs were, how charming she could be when she smiled. In this way, she closed the distance.
You know, when I was writing the scene, I liked her particularly in this moment because she was being daring. She was going for it. He didn't know her, and if he was ever going to know her and see her again after the night of the fundraiser, she would have to do something extraordinary to get his attention. And so this, almost unthinking, this is what she decides to do.
Halfway, and then suddenly there was movement close by that she could only feel at first because she refused to turn her head and look directly. Her heart was pounding. It was a guard in a dark uniform, a badge on his chest and short club at his belt, coming toward her. Edward, she called. She would need his help to make it the rest of the way. It's Ava. Moving quickly, she strode toward the carriage and the group of actors standing around it, swinging her arms and smiling as though all was exactly as it should be. Emmanuel saw her then, though he didn't seem to recognize her. When he had half a moment to really look at her, the lavender wrap, the bare legs, he smiled.
And she doesn't even know if he'll remember her.
No, it's a chance, but, you know, I guess, although I didn't put this on the page, you know, the worst thing that can happen is they throw her off the set. So it was a calculated risk.
The guard followed her. She knew he was talking to her, saying things that she ought to be able to hear and respond to. She was raising her hand to wave to Emmanuel, somehow still closing the distance between them. It felt false, this little wave. The guard put his hand on her arm and squeezed.
Ava! It's good to see you again.
The hand loosened its grip. Emmanuel gave a quick nod to the guard. He was gone.
I love this, and you do this so well. And this is where I was talking about the film gesture. So the guard's right behind her. The hand loosened its grip. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel gave a quick nod to the guard. This is very film-like. He was gone. So it's like the hand disappears off her shoulder, and she's set free into this world.
No, absolutely. Definitely in that scene, the camera is the voice, the point of view. Yeah, no doubt about it.
The feeling was one of being buoyed up off the ground.
Ava, it's good to see you again.
Perhaps only a foot or two, but her sandals no longer touched the street. If she bent her legs and pushed off, she might even fly. It was arranged that she would stand with the audio crew. They would give her headphones and she could listen to the dialogue. When Emmanuel returned to the group of actors, the sun shone on his navy jacket, its buttons and epaulets. The actresses were talking about the sushi restaurant they'd discovered last night. And then Emmanuel's rich voice was picked up by the microphone and spoke directly into Ava's ear.
There's another male. There's Jeremy, who's her real life. What's his relationship to her? Because it mirrors what's about to happen, or could happen. Let's put it that way. It becomes much more explicit than what happens, but...
Right, absolutely. There's a little misdirection in the story.
That's right.
For sure, right? I have you thinking about Ava and Edward Emmanuel, and so when that scene picks up right in the middle of the story...
Ava preferred, when she spent the night with a man, to stay in her own apartment. You're like, hey!
Hey, they slept again. No.
No.
Psych.
That's right. A little
it's
misdirection.
It's Jeremy.
Right.
And so, you know, Jeremy's her age. He's a young guy. He's, you know, he doesn't have himself any more together than she does. What do we know about him? That he failed to show up for work on the night of the...
And Vivian is agitated.
Yeah. But they definitely have an easy relationship. Their relationship is the one that makes sense to people. You know, they're the same age. They clearly have the same interests. But, you know, if this were a Jane Austen novel, he would be the young man who doesn't have enough money or clout to really be a marriage material. Someone we like, but sorry.
Ava preferred, when she spent the night with a man, to stay at her own apartment. She liked having her things around her and sleeping in a bed where she knew the sheets were clean. She sat at a small mirrored table removing her makeup.
I don't think I've ever noticed before. You have very small shoulders.
Have you apologized to Vivian?
Not yet.
Coward. You'll want to work again sometime. And besides, she's in a good mood. In the morning, they were drinking coffee together in a restaurant before saying goodbye. Do you promise to call Vivian? She leaned across the table and playfully pulled his hair.
Ouch. Yes, I promise. Did you say she was in a good mood?
Yes, Edward Emmanuel came to the event at the center. Vivian is probably still in some kind of fangirl heaven.
Edward Emmanuel?
Yes, Edward Emmanuel, the American movie actor. Won the Academy Award. I just watched one of his movies.
I don't think Vivian is the only fangirl here.
He's very charming. They're remaking Persuasion. I was on the set yesterday.
Who let you on the set? Edward Emmanuel?
Maybe.
So she kind of somehow makes a date with Edward. We don't know how that exactly happened, but we imagine it must have happened on the set.
Yeah.
Because he arranges that she's able to hear the audio. So they kind of have a date. Would you just read for me just one little section, which is there was a part of Ava that thought he wouldn't keep the date?
There was a part of Ava that thought he wouldn't keep their date. Yet here he was, offering his arm as they walked to the restaurant. He was wearing a white suit, really, a white suit with a blue shirt and the same black tie from the fundraiser. Perhaps it was his favorite. When she spoke, he turned his head to look at her directly with eyes that were a pale blue, Lovely, but a little faded.
I've been here for 3 weeks, and I've eaten in every decent restaurant in town. Twice.
Is this one your favorite?
It will be after tonight.
Oh my God, you didn't just say that.
No. Of course not. But tomorrow morning, when you're having your coffee, you'll realize I was being sincere.
Ava stopped in the middle of the sidewalk, shaking her head. He smiled at her and then laughed. You'll see.
So this is flirting, this is, right?
I mean, well, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, this is a little provocative, Jane Austen-esque scene here. We're intimating what's to come.
Absolutely. You know, part of what creates the tension in the story is that as the reader, you're never quite sure, right? There are many people who will read the story and think that he is using his celebrity and the awe that is created, you know, when stars enter the real world, so to speak, in order to have relationships with women. And so you're definitely supposed to be in your mind. You're supposed to worry about it, right? And it should be creating some tension. But I think certainly what we discover is that that's not the case.
It didn't take long for them to order and for their drinks to arrive. Emmanuel raised his glass.
To set crashers.
I'm embarrassed, she lied. I've never done anything like that in my life. He laughed, shaking his head. Suddenly, a woman stood at the table wanting, not an autograph, but to take a photo with him on her cell phone. Her voice was breathy and earnest while she spilled out a list of movies she'd seen him in. Emmanuel paused and gave a slow blink. Ava felt a wave of irritation, afraid that he felt that way too, and there would be some kind of scene. She needn't have worried. He simply said,
"Sure,"
and slid his chair back so the woman could more easily put her arm around him.
"You'll have to post this on your social media."
In a few moments, it was over, but then a second approached the table, and then a third. The last, actually, a whole group who crowded all around them and insisted that Ava be in the picture too, asking, "Are you somebody famous too?"
I think writers who write books in which there is a kind of sexual tension in them, oftentimes they get you because they get you to identify with people whose behavior is questionable in a certain way. And the moment that you feel sympathy for someone whose behavior is a little questionable, now you're feeling ambivalent not only about the situation, but about yourself. And it creates, I think, this really interesting mix of emotions in the reader. And so I definitely wanted them to see the flirtation, maybe even to chuckle at it, but then also to think, oh, you know, there's some tension there too, and that we don't know how we feel about this guy who's 60 years old, and so he's 30 years older than she is. For a lot of people, that's, you know, that's a difficult scenario.
Moment.
Yeah.
At the hotel, he walked quickly past the outdoor patio and into the lobby. It was clear he wanted to go up to his room, to be out of sight. She looked around to see if anyone had taken any special notice of him, and there were two or three people staring. Finally, she stood directly beside him and took his arm, her eyes glancing at the elevator. "Let's just take the stairs." He lit only the lamps with the softest light. Revealed was a large room, well-furnished, but clearly provisional and treated as such. Over the back of the couch was a discarded shirt and tie, and on the coffee table beside it, a half-empty bottle of scotch and a dirty glass. On a little table by the window was an open laptop and stacks of paper, scripts, possibly, held together with clips and rubber bands. "This is Edward Emmanuel's room," she thought, "an actor's room. This is what it looks like."
"Sorry for the clutter. I had no idea we'd need to beat such a sudden retreat. I've been feeling happily invisible in Bath."
"I don't mind any of it. The whole thing's a novelty to me."
"I'm going to take a couple minutes and wash my face. And when I return, we'll try to start our evening again."
He pointed at the bottle of scotch.
"Make yourself at home."
Ava found glasses easily enough and poured some into each. She took a sip and let the alcohol warm her throat and chest and stomach. In a moment, she heard an inner door click shut and then the running of a tap. She began to walk around the room, taking in its features more carefully. She stopped by the little table. Amid the clutter of papers, there was a framed photograph, Emmanuel and a woman she assumed was his wife. The photo had the feel of the 1970s about it, monochrome and a little faded. They leaned against a wooden fence, the afternoon sun casting tree shadows upon the ground and lighting the woman's thick blonde hair. Behind them in a meadow, a horse grazed upon dry grass. It was Utah or Montana or Wyoming, someplace like that, she felt sure. In the corner of the photo was the outline of a building. Was this their house? Their meadow? Their life? Or maybe they were just visiting this place, a resort where young and wealthy celebrities went to get away for the weekend, to pretend for themselves instead of for the camera, the kind of people they were. People who lived off the land and who had relationships with large and noble animals. Looking at this photograph, she thought, was really to see something. Written in a woman's hand along the bottom was the inscription, "The perfect day."
I notice how you use the word picture in a variety of different ways here. One, we have they're taking their picture. She sees a photograph on the mantle when she goes back to the hotel room. And three, just the idea of the picture that he's going to be in, because we used to call them pictures. Right. I like it because one's a still frame, and it really seems to me to be the turn in the story, too. It could have gone either way.
Ava, did you say something? I thought I heard you say something to me. Were you talking to someone?
No. Probably I was talking to myself. This is quite a hotel room.
I was worried someone was bothering you. It's happened before. I'm always found eventually.
No, I was just snooping around.
Did you discover anything good?
Just that lovely photograph. She pointed at the framed photo of Emmanuel and his wife. He stood looking at it for a moment and then turned back to Ava.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind if we went for a walk.
Of course not. Relieved, she went to take his arm again as they walked down the stairs and entered the lobby. And so she did. He seemed to want to escape the hotel as much as she did. Her breathing was normal again, and she felt her self-possession return.
That was a long, long time ago.
Referring to the photograph.
It was taken at our ranch in Utah. The horse is dead and the wife divorced. But I still have the ranch.
Ava said nothing. They were walking toward the Pulteney Bridge. Before she knew it, she'd be alone again, too.
Yes, the images of a picture, but even more so the frame in which we put around them. So if you can understand picture in all of those iterations as being something that we're engaged by or looking at,
Studying,
right? But then how do we see it? What interpretation do we put on it? What frame goes around it? When Edward Emmanuel looks at that photo of his, you know, call it his former life, what does he see?
The horse is dead and the wife divorced. But I still have the ranch.
The night had been passed with Ava lying on her bed, still in her blue dress, staring at the ceiling. Marveling as the hours ticked by at how people made choices, any choices, ever. Dawn brought a gray light in the window, and Ava closed her eyes to let the balm of it touch her eyelids. In that moment, she was able to see Edward Emmanuel as he had been on their walk through Bath, smell him too, the scented hotel soap with which he'd washed his face, lavender, maybe jasmine.
Those people at the restaurant reminded me again of Bob March.
She'd said as they'd walked.
He'd wanted to be a director once. Even made a short film. That's how I met him. He'd come to see me in New York with a script. We were sitting at a table having a drink, talking, when these three
beautiful women came up wanting autographs. Bob was incredulous. They were breathtaking, maybe 20 years old, little color in their cheeks from the autumn air. When they were gone, he couldn't stop laughing. He was sure I paid them to stop by while we were together. Nothing I said could get him to think otherwise.
Had you hired them?
No, as it turns out. But that didn't stop him from offering me more money for the part. You mind me telling these old stories?
Are you kidding? Who would mind?
You know, this odd look on your face for a moment.
I was just thinking about what became of those girls. Ava looked at the clock. Soon she'd have to go to work at the center. Enter again the world of striving and of small successes, small disappointments. A Vivian standing in a doorway, tapping her foot impatiently.
Oh, that's a hard one.
She'd be wearing a peach-colored pantsuit and channeling Margaret Thatcher. This is what my life is going to become, Ava thought. She would work at the museum and, like Vivian, nibble at the edges of a bigger life. When she saw a movie, it would be in the theater along with everybody else. This much, at least, she could see with insomniac clarity. Yes, Ava would see the new Persuasion with Jeremy. It took little for her to imagine it.
Jane Austen, I think, was asked, you know, why her books always ended so happily, you know, with births and marriages. And I think she very famously said something like, you know, because life is horrible enough, you know, I want this fiction, you know, to represent the best that can happen to people, you know, and to show us a kind of happiness, even if we don't get to experience it in our own lives.
She thought for a moment about calling Jeremy and telling him about all this, about her evening with Edward Emmanuel. Even at dawn, his voice would be laughing at her, as ever.
Oh, Ava.
Oh, Ava.
She is sad, or seems sad, but I'm very happy with Ava at the end of the story. I like the decisions that she makes. I like that, you know, she's able to make adjustments to how she perceives herself. And, you know, she's going to find a new dream, a new way to be happy. Maybe can't see it yet, but, you know, it's around the corner. That's another story.
Jeff, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me and for doing the interview.
You're
a lot of fun.
You're welcome.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Thank you to actors Megan Condren, Brenda Booth, Lynn Holton, David Wallace, Richard Wells, and Larry Smith as Edward Emmanuel. Thank you to musician and composer extraordinaire Silas Height for channeling Jane Austen in his beautifully wrought soundscape. Thank you to Adam Simon of Simon Sound for helping to mix and for mastering the program. Thank you to Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack for keeping music alive and well in Arkansas. Generous funding for Arts and Letters was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to writer Jeffrey Condren for his artistic sense and sensibility. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's heed these words from Jane Austen. Time will explain.